Recorded live.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game. Here with me in studio, both my boys, the firefighter that protects us all from fire, of course, Chris Rankin in the building. Hey, I'm glad because the Giants weren't there, things may have gone a little different than at least I thought, but hey, we'll get over that with the sweet stylings of Weasel Weasel.
Yeah, boy!
Stephen Weasel Hurley here bringing it to us loud here on NGSC Sports, of course, here via the TalkShoe player. Yeah, so there you go. Rocking it, NGSCSports.com, of course, with Super Bowl being officially in the books. Check out the 2015 NFL Draft section we got going on up there. It's already time to start looking out for next season. I mean, let me ask you this, guys. Does it make sense to you that I'm already, like, I was watching a little ESPN against my better judgment, and they're putting up the lines for betting on next year's Super Bowl already. Does that make anyone else feel dirty?
Yeah.
I mean, can we let the season at least get a little cold first now that it's dead?
Well, I think for the betting-wise, I think that, you know, that last touchdown and stuff, with that, there was I think, $5 billion that were affected, you know, with betting and stuff.
So ladies and gentlemen.
That play right there, boom. That's a lot of people, because the lines were like, it was pretty even throughout the board.
Yeah.
And because it was, you know, a game-winning play type of thing, $5 billion was the difference. That was like craziness.
$5 billion.
And more, and a lot more people were picking the Seahawks. So.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well.
And they do have the one, was it 5-1 odds next year already?
Yeah, with the Patriots, it's 6-1. And it's because there's so many contract situations that got to be worked out. The draft hasn't happened yet. I don't know. It just seems like a bad plan. I don't know. But, I mean, hell, someone out there is betting it or else they wouldn't do it. And I'll leave it at that. Anyways, so as is the custom for our Super Bowl coverage, we walk through it. We go through the commercials and the halftime show because, I don't know, somebody somewhere has, like, written it in stone that we have to go over that if you're wanting to be a talent talking about the Super Bowl. Okay. And then, of course, we're breaking it down, the game itself, in just the way that our resident research talent, Weasel Weeze. No, throw down.
Yeah, boy.
See, we do some of this impromptu. I'm not ready when you pull out something cool like that. I can't front on that. Anyways, let's get right down to it. We're going to start off on a positive note because I'm sure we'll have a lot of griping to do about this year's commercials. And we'll get to that in a second. But best commercials, Chris, number three in your docket was
the Bud Light Human Pac-Man.
The human pack. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, that was that. I will say this: when I saw that commercial, my response was, "I could totally do that." I don't know. That looked fun to me. The oversized quarter, all that. And hey, you remembered it was Bud Light, so
right.
I don't know. Is that cooler than table tennis with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah. Yes, it was.
I think so too. Weasel's nodding his head as well. Yeah. We're unanimous on that. Weasel, who you got?
I got the Esurance commercials with Lindsay Honan. Lindsay Lohan,
yeah.
Picking up some kids, and the kids are like, she's sort of my mom. And another one that they had, same kind of premise, was Walter White, and he was a sort of a pharmacist.
A pharmacist-ish.
So, yeah. So.
And he's from Breaking Bad.
Yes. Right. So I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston, of course, the actor in question. I felt like the Bryan Cranston was a bit of a disappointment personally. It's certainly not in my worst commercials, but it did make my best because I feel like they could have executed it better. But I can't front on picking it, and you know, a lot of people were like, in the car commercial with the accident or whatever, they were talking about, you know, I could barely recognize Lindsay Lohan, and then I said without even thinking about it, that's because she's so wrecked. Hi-yo! See, because the car wreck. Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Anyways. Of course, at my number three spot, I work in IT by day, so you got to understand, hearing old people talking about stuff that they don't understand is hilarious to me at times. And Bryant Gumbel and Corgi Roberts on the show being like, what is this with the old ad? And then it transitions to when they're in the new BMW car and they have all this technology in there and they're talking on their phones. What is this? How does this work? I thought that was funny. That spoke to me. So I mean, you know, I'm already tech support by day. I'm tech support by night as well for my grandparents and stuff. My grandparents, my parents, my daughter's grandparents. I guess right. I guess, whatever. The point is this, folks. That was my number three.
Yeah, that was a runner up for one of the worst. I thought.
Okay. Hater. see, I'm probably going to shock some people with some of my worst picks too, because stuff that people liked, I didn't for my own reasons. But we'll get to that in a minute. Number two, Chris.
It's one of the sappy ones, the Budweiser Lost Puppy.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was a weak year for commercials.
Yeah.
So there wasn't much to pick on. So I'm going with the Lost Puppy.
So Budweiser. Let me get this straight.
Because when you have little puppies and you got Clydesdales to go together, it's great.
The commercial that had this song on it was the one that you got all sappy over. They redid the Proclaimers with a slow tempo, and you got sappy over.
Right.
Own that, Chris. You should be sad. How you doing? Come on! Really? He's just dancing in the corner there. Do I need to turn your mic up? Oh, this isn't hip-hop. I don't know. Anyways, so that's why I have to make fun of you, is because of that. Anyways, Weasel.
Mine was actually the same one, pretty much.
Now I gotta queue it up again.
Pretty
God
much,
damn.
The whole premise of it was that a puppy, he got like on a horse like trailer or something like that, gets lost away from his home, and he's making his way home, and he meets a coyote, or I think it was a wolf or something like that.
It was a wolf.
It was a wolf, and so the Clydesdales come for the rescue. So it was a cool commercial. Just a. Disappointed, like, that there were, like, a lot of them. Doritos, I think they maybe had one. And
they had two of them.
Two?
Yeah, Doritos had two.
Doritos
not that great.
Really came out poor. We're usually talking about at least one of them.
We're usually talking about Budweiser or Bud Light and Doritos. And they weren't all that great this year.
Yeah, we didn't. I know they didn't crack my top three.
It didn't feel like a Super Bowl commercial. It's like there wasn't nothing that really stood out.
By the way, I love I'm hitting this point home on you guys' pick by just letting the Proclaimers play. That does something for me. Whatever. Because Scottish accents, that's why this song is cool. At least that's what my wife says. Anyways, number two for me, keeping it in that area of the country, not Scotland literally, because I think Liam Neeson's actually Irish, but the Clash of Clans commercial where he's doing the monologue about getting his revenge and all that. Look, I'm sorry. There you go. I mean, after all the silliness with Taken and all these other movies he's been in, we're trying to take him seriously as a hero. It's getting to the point where Key and Peele even talk about him. Liam Neeson is my bee! Okay, and then to hear him get this hyped over a Clash of Clans game. Okay, it did it for me. There you go. It did it for me well better than any Taken movie did. I'll tell you that. I don't know. Anyways, I'm getting a little bit more approving nods from you two on this one. I don't feel as judged.
Yep.
Number one, Chris.
Clash of the Clans. it was pretty funny when he's sitting there and he's just talking about the game and just like, I'm coming after you or whatever. It's revenge.
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
not anybody's just going to be able to execute that because, like, he obviously doesn't curse because it's, worldwide television. It's just the poise. Money. There you go. Liam Neeson's is my stuff, as Key and Peele would say. Weasel!
My number one was actually Empowered by Microsoft. They have the one with it. So the kid's name is Brandon O'Neill. And he was the kid with two right. prosthetic legs.
Right.
And one of those, one of those things where it's like an inspirational, the kid has got so much energy and, and competitiveness and... So that's my number one.
Yeah. And you know what? There's a reason why I'm not making fun of you with the Proclaimers song is I get it. I like funnier commercials, so I tend to kind of avoid the sentimental ones for the top three, because if you don't put them high enough, you'll actually get, the hard time. No, but that was a good commercial. I liked it too. And yeah, I'll leave it at that. But my, you did your number one. I guess it's my turn. My number one was the Blue Pill with Fiat. That the old dude is out hanging out with his lady, and then he's trying to get the pill because, the intent is relations. And long story short, it ends up landing in the gas tank of the Fiat, and the little wimpy car turns into a bigger car. I thought that was clever. I thought that was funny. And I'm getting disapproving looks from both of you again.
Yeah, that was kind of corny there, Kyle.
You're corny.
Good comeback. That's not I can't respond to that one.
Anyways, bottom three, Chris.
Number one, or number coming in third, the worst, I guess.
least worst.
Would be the Nissan Cats in the Cradle.
Yeah.
One. I mean, you're selling cars, and you're talking, you're showing this and everything, and I don't know what it is this year. It was like a lot of dad commercials.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some, I mean, you have the Dove one with dad being there, and then you have the Nissan coming with dad's not there. So it's...
I guess they didn't get the memo. Right. I don't know.
It was just that one, and I guess that was it. The guy that sang Cats in the Cradle came up with the original one, not the Ugly Kid Joe version. He died in a car crash in 81.
Oh boy.
The car company's doing this and showed the car crash.
So an element of bad taste introduced here. Interesting. So. I wasn't aware of that until you just said it. Now I'm kind of openly insulted about it. I don't know. Weasel!
Budweiser commercial, actually. It was the one where they had the brewed the hard way. Now, they were making fun of like craft beers and stuff.
Right.
And an example was like a pumpkin peach ale.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just like they kept on like saying, brew the hard way. And someone's like, really? So.
I want the irony in all this to be that the person that doesn't drink calls out the Budweiser ad. Because I don't have it on my bottom three, but the first reason why I didn't believe any of that is, yeah, I'm going to keep drinking my peach whatever ale because your beer sucks. By the way, so much for Budweiser as an advertiser. Anyways, I have the Kim Kardashian T-Mobile commercial. It's like, you can instead spend time looking at me in my outfits and working on my backhand. And look, first of all, I work in data for a living as my day job, and she's talking about using data for something that's corrupting our entire civilization. Yeah, of course I'm stoked about that. Not really. Oh, and by the way, I'm a T-Mobile freaking customer. Super. Anyways, Chris, number two.
Was the Mercedes Tortoise and the Hare.
Good one.
They were advertising BigRace.com. Oh, you can go vote who wins. Except last week on Monday, they had the best Super Bowl commercials ad on TV. It was either Monday or Thursday.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they showed some of the new one commercials that were going to be showed on
Super Bowl,
and they showed the end of that commercial. I'm like, then what's the point of voting if you're going to leak out the commercial beforehand?
Bingo.
So I'm like, you know what? You just lost your whole thing with the BigRace.com, and it's nothing going against it. And then you're calling your car slow and steady. So, I mean, how are you going to call your own car slow and steady? You know, so that was almost my worst one. I almost put it in the worst.
I don't blame you. So. It was bad. It didn't make the look. There was no shortage of bad commercials this year. Right. So if we don't have the same ones, that is what it is. But Weasel,
my number two worst was Squarespace. You have Jeff Bridges and he's like humming and stuff. And
no.
Yeah, that crap. And so pretty much it's the whole commercial him doing that, and I'm like.
First of all, any of our listeners who meditate, we apologize. Weasel doesn't mean to offend.
No, it's just, no. That's only when Jeff Bridges does it, though.
Oh, okay, yeah, but it's cool when everyone else does, except for Jeff Bridges.
Yes,
got it.
Yes.
And
safe.
You know what? That statement is so accurate. That, too, is my number two.
Aww.
Because I'll tell you what, with Jeff Bridges, I thought was a good setup. I'm like, oh, shit, something cool is going to happen. And then it doesn't. You let me down.
Yeah.
Failure at life commercial. Number one, worst commercial, Chris.
McDonald's pay with lovin'.
Some people could have so much fun with that.
So I can go into McDonald's, call my mom, say I love you or whatever, hang up and just walk away with food without paying. That's where I get out of the commercial.
The cashiers have to tell you like what to do, I guess. So if they just have it, the whole thing is it's about happiness at I think it's pay with loving was the thing, but yeah, the cashier tells you to like, you know, call your mom as you're saying and stuff like that, and then but I'm just wondering if people are going to take it a little bit far. So
well,
and then I want a McDonald's worker to tell me to do something too, and
yeah, so that, hey, so. Dance no. I one of my friends put on Facebook that he knew someone that did that. So, I mean, it's legit that they did it. And all I could think of, and for some reason I was fixated on Chris for this. If someone asked him to do it, he's like, no. No, stop it. You'll get free food. You know. He'd think it over. I'll put it that way. Excuse me, Weasel.
For the worst number one, for me was Loctite Glue. It was a bunch of people, kind of weird people. They were dancing. It was Loctite Glue.
Gotcha.
Weird people kind of dancing around, and they were showing like uses for glue and stuff. But I was like, it was kind of reminded me of the there was the Super Bowl ad where a model was making out with a nerd.
GoDaddy, yeah.
And it had kind of that route to it, but it was like, no.
at least the one you're talking about, I didn't put that in my worst commercials that year because I got the point. You know, oh, our nerds are great, and they'll never, I mean, look, a nerd like that actually scoring, I kind of feel good about it. You know, I mean, I'm not one myself, and, you know, I dig my wife. She's hot. But I felt good for the nerd that he's never going to be able to kiss a 10 like that. You know what I'm talking about. He had like the little mini nerd fro and the glasses. Mm-hmm. And, I don't know. Anyways, certainly that was well better than the commercial you're talking about. We'll leave it at that. Only because I could walk away with that good sentiment. But what a lot of people put as one of their favorite commercials, I put as the one I hated the most. Yeah, folks, that. First of all, I've already spoken to my disdain that this is your sappy song in the background. Congratulations, your sappy song is a bunch of drunk Scottish dudes serenading a chicken what sounds like it could be a karaoke bar. Okay? Da-da-da-da. There's your damn song. Moreover, they're retiring the Clydesdales, and you ended on this. Yeah. That, I'm just thoroughly disappointed by that. Now, granted, in other years, this may not made it count for top three, but between those two crimes, I can't let it pass. There you go. And both of you just put your heads down. It's like, all right, we know you hate the song. Stop it, Cam.
Right. Just, yeah, there's a couple other runner-ups I like that were decent, like okay. The TurboTax.
Yeah.
That one was pretty good, except that people were filing their taxes with TurboTax, saying it was free, and then it was charging them, increase the rates for their charge too, and not tell anyone.
Yeah.
Instead of being like $40, it was like double or whatever.
So they are the British.
Right. So that's what I thought was pretty funny. And then also another one I kind of liked that a lot of people hated, and they sent out a memo in the third quarter of their ad was Nationwide. Hmm. The one with the Make Safe Happen. It was about the kid that was dead. He's like, oh, I'm never going to grow up because I died. And they were showing like stats of people, the kids and everything like that.
Yeah.
They weren't selling insurance. They were just trying to make people aware of, you know, there could be accidents in the house. So they took their ad and just made it more informational instead of trying to sell stuff and make things good. If you go to that website, Make Stuff Happen or Make Safe Happen.
Yeah.
It has like safety tips for all age groups and everything in there. So, I mean, it's a big informational thing. So I think they did their part. People don't like it. Oh, how can you have that with that? And, you know, so gloomy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's reality. And then they have a website on there on how to try to prevent stuff. So, yeah. I mean, they did that with it.
I think the thing about that commercial is that for a successful commercial, one thing it is that it has to be something that, you know, people will talk about. And the thing about that one, specific one you're talking about, is that it gets people talking, and it was one of those little downer kind of commercials, but it was thoughtful, and that would be on my the better side, as opposed to people who don't like it. So
yeah, I try to stay away from rating. Like I said, I think this falls into the sappier category earlier, but I try to avoid the serious stuff, simply because. I get the people who are like, oh my God, it's so depressing. But by the same token, is there ever a good way to present this information? And this is done not with the conscience to entertain, but to be thoughtful. So since I'm rating my commercials based on their entertainment value, I kind of left this one out. And I get what Chris is saying here. You know, it was supposed to be an effort to educate. So, of course, when you try to educate people, what's going to happen? They're going to get all cheesed off about it. You know, but on the whole, I'm with Chris. It's a good concept. There's really no good way to present this information all happy. It's like, hey, here's how you can keep your kid from getting hurt. All right. Mm-hmm. Because I'm happy. No. That's not going to work, you know. So
I just like it because I just thought it was powerful afterwards. I'm like, wow, that's I mean, that was deep. That's what I thought. I'm like, well, that was a good one. I had that originally in my top three because I'm like, that was I'm like doing research online and everything. And
yeah.
And people like all hated and everything. And I'm like, they had thousands of people already on their website by the third quarter on that make safe happen.
Okay.
Thousands of people. And most people are at Super Bowl parties, so they're not going to go look online when they're at the party and everything like that.
They check their phones.
Right.
So, you know what? I mean, that's a success as far as we're concerned. You know, I mean, heck. And not to mention, it sounds like it's particular to people with kids, which obviously isn't everybody.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, I think you're right. I think it was an effort by an entity, be it a corporation, an insurance company, whatever you want to call it, to try to show social conscious. And while corporations doing that, you could be skeptical of that all you want. Whoever at least built this idea was doing it from a genuine place. And you're not going to get a better size audience than the Super Bowl. It wasn't meant to be entertaining. And like I said, if you're grading it on entertainment, then you're doing
it. And then they didn't cash in on it. Like, oh, you should insure your kids and stuff like that for their.
Right.
They didn't cash in on that. They're trying to show tips on how to keep them alive.
Right. It wasn't a sales pitch. I agree. It was more of a public service announcement.
And you don't see that many companies do that during Super Bowl. Spend $4.5 million for that.
It's up to four and a half.
Four and a half now, yeah.
Jeez. For 30 seconds.
Yes.
Yeah, just to make that clear. I don't know. Anyway, so the next best of trivial Super Bowl stuff, halftime show. Katy Perry.
Great.
Paid to be next. He paid to be in this halftime show, which is a first here. Also had Lenny Kravitz and Missy Elliott have their guest spot, so to speak. Chris says great. Weasel.
I liked it. Katy Perry's all right. And
which is him saying she's hot.
Yeah, I think it was Missy Elliott, right?
Yeah.
I think that was just for having Katy Perry and her. I don't think it was close enough for – I think it was very differing, and having Katy Perry in that.
You want people who are more alike, like Aerosmith and Britney Spears.
I just didn't see how it flowed with the rest of it.
I'm not talking smack on you. I just love talking smack on that halftime Aerosmith and Britney Spears.
You're not going to top it was Bruno Mars with Red Hot Chili Peppers last year.
Right.
That was great. That was awesome last year.
And I think the sign that this was a good Super Bowl halftime show was you're not getting the, oh my, like, you won't have Lewis Black in his comedy routine talking about jamming a spoon up his rear because it was that painful to watch, like Britney Spears and Aerosmith.
Right.
But, or NSYNC or whatever. But the point is this, you have to follow Bruno Mars. That's a tough sell. But people were saying it wasn't Bruno Mars, but it was good. Hey, that's a win, as far as I'm concerned. You know, first of all, the only thing I'll knock on it, you come out with that song Roar, and you're having the eye of a tiger, and your statue looks like a lion. Okay, that was kind of a fail. Then you come out with these dancing sharks and the beach. That was creepy. But overall, I'm with you guys. I thought it was a pretty good show. Missy Elliott, I'm with Weasel. I didn't think it fit, but I wasn't necessarily fond of her stuff anyway. Not to say she's bad.
I didn't think Lenny Kravitz fit in there either. So, yeah. I mean, you keep bringing all these older people coming in with the new hip, and it's...
Lenny Kravitz did well enough in his performance. They blended him well, I thought. But Missy Elliott, like, if Lenny Kravitz was asked to do his music, he would have stuck out. I'm with you.
Right. And then, I know some people that liked Missy Elliott part. I didn't care for that part.
She
said more Katy Perry and we're good. But
because umbrellas, that's why. I don't know. Anyways, you know, we're talking an awful lot about this trivial stuff. We got an awful lot of game review, and because we just talked about halftime, it might be a little early, but we're going to go into our halftime. We'll be back in about 30 seconds. You're listening to the Student of the Game on the National, on NGFC Sports. I'm going to be the man who's lonely when I'm two. And when I'm dreaming, well, I know I'm going to dream. I'm going to dream about the time when I'm with you. When I go out, well, I know I'm going to be the man who goes along with you. And when I come home, yes, I know I'm going to be the man. You know, I feel like I should apologize a little bit to the Proclaimers. Like, I talked about this being a drunken karaoke Scottish song. I like this song. I just don't like it being slowed down and used as a sappy interlude. By the way, you know where this first got heard? I only happened to be in the room when my mom was watching my daughter and babysitting, and she had Dancing with the Stars on, which was the first time I heard this slow interlude of that song. And yeah, it was painful then. And now you guys, dear to my heart, both bring it up now.
You know what's funny is last year's Super Bowl, they had the Budweiser when the horse went away to be with the Clydesdales.
Yeah.
And then after the parade, the horse comes running back to the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Weasel had that in the top three last year.
I know I did.
Yeah. So it's like the same freaking almost commercial.
But yeah, the song blew it for me, dude. I'm telling you what's what, you know. I don't know. Anyways. Hey, look, if that's a me problem, I can live with that.
Yes, it's a you problem.
Fine.
We got 2-1 then.
You have a problem with sheep, it's a you problem. That's exactly... No, I'm just kidding. Anyways. All right. Let's get into the game. Weasel, the kickoff happened, obviously. Then what?
All right, so now...
The kickoff happened, then what?
Oh, yeah. Coin toss. NFC has won last 16 out of 18. Hmm. Coin tosses.
A stat win.
What do you know?
Weasel, rock it.
All right, so note that you have Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, and Cam Chancellor, all defenders for the Seahawks. All of them were playing with injuries.
A.K.A. the Legion of Boom.
Yes. I think some of the words I think you were used were like torn, like a...
Sprain
or torn. So, yeah, but all three of them played. So you got the beginning of the game, Patriots' first drive, and they got a first down, and then they had a 4th and 6 at their own 35-yard line. What happened was, though, it was controversial. They didn't really make a big deal out of it, but...
Well, Collinsworth did, but he was right, too.
It was Seahawks special teamers player Jerron Johnson. He dove the block up the punt, and he missed. So he not only runs into the kicker, but it is a 15-yard penalty for running into the planted leg of the kicker.
Well, it's roughing versus running into. If you hit the plant leg, it's roughing. Otherwise, it's running into. You're absolutely right.
So they called it a 5-yard penalty. It should have been 15.
Running into instead of a roughing. Yes.
Right. I mean, it was pretty clear that the guy ran into his leg.
I agree.
It was 4th and 6. The Patriots ended up declining that penalty. Mm-hmm. And that would have gave the Patriots a first down.
Here's what's interesting about that is the only reason why they got a first down was a missed tackle. And so they essentially went 3 and out after that.
Yeah.
So I think that would have been mentally destructive to the Seahawks. Might have even set up a situation where the Patriots may have gotten a touchdown on their first drive had that continued, just because that's the kind of thing you did what? And then you start playing more careful, and maybe not. I don't know. But anyways, Weasel.
It's one of those things where you look at the play, you get the rules there. It was pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah, hey, $42,000 a year raise 2 years ago. And it's the biggest stage on the damn planet, literally.
So off that punt, the Seahawks got it back, and 3 and out. So the Patriots got the ball with 9:20 remaining. They had a 13-play drive, 4 first downs, and with 1:50 remaining at the 10-yard line, you have Tom Brady throwing a terrible interception. He was
terrible. He was getting
pressure on him.
Yep.
And so he didn't really get to step through his throw. So he just kind of chucked it.
Could you tell who was targeted on that?
I didn't even see a player within 10 yards of that.
I was guessing it was Gronk.
I think one player was towards the left sideline.
Yeah.
Another player was at the
Edelman was at the back of the end zone.
The back of the end zone, but no one was behind where the ball would have went.
Stat show is intended for Edelman.
Okay. So, and that could be. I was guessing Gronk because,
If it was towards Gronk, he was probably 5 yards behind him.
Right. Well, yeah. And I mean, look, where I'm at is before... Before the end of the Super Bowl, Brady has thrown 3 picks throughout these playoffs, forcing the ball to Gronk. So it makes sense to me, but if that didn't happen, so be it. Weasel.
So that ended up being intercepted by cornerback Jeremy Lane. He's one of those names that,
he's not a big name, but,
he's their cornerback.
He's a three-year player.
Yeah. But the thing is like you always think Sherman. You think Earl Thomas. You think Chancellor.
Even Maxwell.
Not really this guy. But so the guy made his first interception of his career, and he was being tackled by Edelman, and it was his arm came down, and the guy it's a pretty gruesome one.
Yeah.
He broke his wrist. I thought it was his wrist, but they're saying he broke his arm.
Yeah.
So
6 of 1, half a dozen of the other. The point is this, and all of us have seen it playing sports. Everything's fine if you fall, but sometimes you use your arm to catch yourself and you hurt yourself.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's what happened there.
And but it was a big play. Took at least 3 points off the board.
I'll agree with that for sure. I mean, the red zone for the Pats was 3 for 4. Boom, there's your one.
And you got so Lane, he's out for the game. Then the Seahawks, in the first quarter, it ends with them having -2 passing yards. Great job there, Russell Wilson.
If you didn't have that, I would have.
Yeah. So going to the second quarter, you got 12-minute mark. Brady was throwing, pretty much short passes all game.
That's what the Patriots do.
Carved them up and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And his first deep pass was down the right sideline to tight end Rob Gronkowski, he couldn't, it was kind of underthrown type of thing, and he couldn't adjust to it, the ball, good enough. So what happened with 9:51 remaining, you got the Patriots at the Seahawks 11-yard line. And you have Brady throwing a bullet to wide receiver Brandon LaFell for the touchdown.
Right, on Simon, number 27 of the Seahawks.
And he was he did do a short post route. And the thing about that play was that there was a collision, and it was between two Seahawks players. You have safety Earl Thomas running into Thorald Simon.
Yeah.
I think you notice that name coming up because I think he was Jeremy Lane was above him in the cornerback depth chart. And but they were picking on him. So
it's the difference between a starter and a backup in the Super Bowl. That's what you do. And I mean, hey, look, regardless of who was on the field, okay, you're Brady, and they've had great coverage on everybody to this point. Then you see Brandon LaFell, who not a great receiver necessarily, but was a number two in Carolina last year, and somebody who's lined up outside shade of him wide to the left. Then that same receiver, LaFell, crosses the face of that corner. Guess what? You got an easy pass. Now, we were talking about this before the show, and Weasel picked it up impromptu, knew the answer immediately. He's not getting paid millions of dollars. Or even hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I'll pose the question again so everybody in the audience could be aware of what you knew that guy doesn't. Wide receiver out left, lined up in the outs in the X or Y slot. You're the corner covering him. Man coverage here. What do you do when you line up?
You bring him into the inside.
Inside shade, exactly.
Right, because you use the outside, you use the end line as your other defender.
Or the sideline in this case, yes. Exactly.
Use that as your other defender, so you take away the inside and force them to go over the top.
Fundamentally just stood up outside of the receiver and just left that route wide open. It was pretty sad. Anyways, Weasel.
You then have, at 9:47 remaining, you have a Seahawks 3-and-out. 8:05 remaining was a Patriots 3-and-out. So
now I think at this point in the game, actually no, keep going. I think it's at halftime, so I'll wait till then.
Things got pretty interesting with 7:07 remaining. So the Seahawks finally get their passing game going, thanks to a wide receiver named, I'll look this up.
Chris Matthews.
Isn't that like CNBC? I think he has a show.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Is it Hardball with Chris Matthews? Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're right.
There
anyways.
You go.
But this guy is actually a 6'5", 218-pound wide receiver. He was signed off the practice squad on December 6th.
December 6th, yep.
He had no catches throughout the regular season, no catches in the playoffs.
Which means his first career catch is in the goddamn Super Bowl.
In the Super Bowl, and that is a little bit more than that. But he used his height and size to bring in a 44-yard pass, and he had to climb pretty much he towered over 5'10", 190-pound cornerback Kyle Arrington.
Yeah.
That's one another one of those corners, and they would, actually figure out that maybe we should get someone taller to guard him. It took him a good while, though.
Well, midway through the third, I think, is when they started putting
Matthews
Browner on there.
Had not just his first catch, but his first few catches. in the Super Bowl in this game. And that was an amazing play. I kind of felt like he bailed Wilson out a little bit on a throw. He Matthews had to turn completely in, around to make this play. And just an excellent play all the way around. Number 13, for those who are wondering.
And it did, because it took a while, but this finally got Russell Wilson going.
Yes.
So that was big.
His first completion of the game came at 5:36.
Which, at about this point, he was a 2-for-4 on the night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go.
So that did lead to a Lynch touchdown. So you have 2:16 remaining for the Patriots. Then 8-play drive ended with a 22-yard touchdown pass to Gronk. Now, Gronk was being guarded by K.J. Wright, the linebacker, 6'4", 246 pounds. But Gronk, you know, it's just the guy's like, you know, so athletic
effortless.
And stuff. Yeah,
it was completely effortless. What? Look, and it wouldn't be the only time they would make this mistake in the game. Now, granted, this was the only one that was for a score, but it would set up for another touchdown later. We'll get to that when Weasel does. But guys, folks, people, am I the only one here who think it's a bad idea to put a linebacker on Gronk when he's split out wide? The linebacker has to go to extra effort to line up out there when that happens. What are you doing? I get, okay, fine. You don't want Cam Chancellor on him because his knee's messed up or whatever. Okay, fine. I know a few times they had Sherman lined up over Gronk. Why not make it? Look, whenever Gronk is lined out wide, Sherman, you're a spy. Get on it. When I see that happen, all I can think is that they had to have not practiced Gronk splitting out. And am I wrong?
Right. Well, the problem with Sherman is with his arm, he had a hard time tackling. So you put Gronk out there, I mean, if I was Brady and I see Gronk with Sherman covering him, I'm going to tell Gronk to do like a two-step stop and dump the ball off right off to him quick, and just because Sherman can't tackle him.
Well.
With that one arm, and then you got the Cam Chancellor with his hurt leg or whatever. Yeah, I would have done that all day long. They had Sherman over him every time.
But you've changed the play to a screen, not to a simple touchdown pass that he had against KJ Wright. I'll live with that.
Right. But I'm saying, but if the Seahawks would have done that with Sherman out there on him, I would have gone with it. I would just gone with 2 yards off
well,
for
fair,
a screen
and
stuff like that.
Yeah, and maybe Sherman. And actually, I'll say this: the one thing that the Seahawks did do well with their coverage of Gronk was mix it up and show different guys. But a linebacker on the split wide, dude.
I mean, they were just waiting for that kind of matchup. So
precisely. Thank you, Weasel.
So you got a 14-7 score with the Patriots leading. And it's for 31 seconds left. Seattle got the ball. It would be a touchback. And a lot of teams, or maybe there's some teams like the Packers who wouldn't be as aggressive. But
we're still talking about that.
instead of just nailing it, 31 seconds ain't that long, but they had 3 timeouts.
Yeah, you try to at least get points out of it.
No, I mean, I don't think they did. I think they were just trying to run out the clock. But their first play went 19 yards with Turbin.
Yep, you have the 19-yard play. Next play,
and so
you
I mean,
timeout.
Well, even with that 19 yards, you bring it up to the 39-yard line now. Now you got a chance for at least a field goal.
Okay.
Because you still have all 3 timeouts left.
Weasel.
They ended up getting on the next play 17 yards, so they were at the New England 44.
So 2 plays, 36 yards.
Yeah.
Boom.
And with 11 seconds left, there was a face mask penalty for 15 yards that brought.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Right.
It brought the Seahawks all the way to the 11-yard line, and this guy, C. Matthews, his name showed up again. So he was he took a route to the left.
Chris Matthews. Hey, I don't mean to play hardball with you, but you just said the dude's name earlier.
I know, but it's like
no, you were setting me up to make a hardball joke. You
name
all along.
Of course. So that guy shows up and does something nice, 11-yard touchdown, and of course he does his little like pump up thing to the crowd and stuff, and I think that was his second reception. So
first, let's get something out of the way. You're not bringing enough urgency to this whole situation. There's 6 seconds left, and they're 11 yards out in the red zone. I would not, repeat, would not have attempted this play. I'd have taken my points. I'd have gone on my merry way. This was a gamble, in my opinion, and it was a quick fire-off play. It was well-executed and probably the single best football play by the Seahawks was on this particular play, on this particular drive, hell. I know they got a 15-yard penalty to help them. But I think that play got off so fast that even had Matthews not made the play, had he not played hardball with his corner and gotten the catch, I think they still would have been able to get the kick off.
He didn't play hardball with it. They had their third string with the corner because, really, their third string corner, Logan Ryan, he was playing 10 yards off of Matthews. So he's playing around the goal line on that snap. I mean, you're 11 yards. And when Matthews starts coming out, you play the line. You play the goal line. He took three more steps into the end zone and left them there for that quick pass.
Overcommitted.
You play to the goal line on those things.
You
play to win the game. No, you play to the goal line on those, and you let him go over the top of you because you got the end back of the end zone. But he's playing middle towards – he's like 3 yards into the end zone, gives him that cushion right there to score that touchdown. And it was this Logan Ryan who's a third corner in.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they didn't put Browner over there on him with the height because there's no
– They hadn't taken him seriously.
Right, but still, I mean, he's the tallest freaking receiver on the field.
I'll put it this way. They were still more worried about Curse and Baldwin as the big names, and maybe even Luke Wilson in this case, who was virtually quiet in this particular instance.
Yeah, I think it was quiet all night.
Well, he did drop one ball that was right in his hands on a nice pass.
And he did have a false start, too.
So, there you go. Great game, Wilson. But I can fault Ryan for his coverage. I can't fault them shifting over to Chris Matthews. But give Russell Wilson credit on his throw. It was very nice. It was to the outside. It's where it needed to be, all that stuff.
It was pretty risky, considering that there was 6 seconds, and he caught the pass with two.
Bingo.
So, but that tied up the game at 14-all going into halftime.
That's proof that the Seahawks did the right things where even if they missed it, they still would have walked away with 3 points, potentially relying on Steve Hoschka.
Yeah. So, yeah. He brought this into the third quarter where you have the Seahawks getting the ball. You have the highlight of that drive. It was a 7-play drive.
To open the second half.
Chris Matthews on a 1st and 10 at the Seattle 38-yard line.
Oh, snap.
45-yard reception, and it was over Devin McCourty. So... another highlight for the guy. I think that was his fourth catch, 108 yards and a touchdown, I believe. So
on the night,
yes. And so that led to them getting to the Patriots 8-yard line. They ended up kicking a field goal, 17-14, and the Patriots now get the ball, 11:09, and you have a very it was actually a pretty interesting drive here. So the first interception by Brady. It was with a 39 at the 32-yard line of the Patriots. And it looks like you have...
Actually, second interception. He threw one previously to Lane, right?
Yeah.
So second interception.
Second interception, yes.
There you go.
And so you have Bobby Wagner, a linebacker for the Seahawks.
Yep.
He stepped back, and Gronk was doing like a curl route in the middle of the field. And he, like, you know, was, like, pedaling back, pedaling. He turned, and he smelled it. He sniffed it out. And he ended up getting right in front of it and intercepting it. That was pretty big. It led to the Seahawks getting the ball with 8:07 remaining.
Say, Weasel, was that in the middle of the field where the linebacker was operating?
Yeah.
And exactly. And when they had success covering Gronk, they would start out with that coverage, and if Gronk ran a certain distance, he'd be handed off to a safety. I loved it when they did that. But again... not when it's outside, not when he's split wide, not when he's one-on-one. Chris.
Right. Well, this ball, too, by Brady, I mean, it was poorly thrown. I mean, it threw to the outside shoulder when he's coming in.
Yeah.
To where you just looked off that linebacker.
And now he is.
And now
you just sent him.
Right.
I got you.
And you throw the ball to that shoulder of Gronk. If it's on the other side of the other shoulder of Gronk, Wagner doesn't intercept this ball, and Gronk has another completion or reception.
Or at least a shot at it. Yeah, I'll agree with that. Definitely. Weasel.
All right, so for this drive, you have they did get the ball because of the interception, good field position, and it ends up being a 2nd and 3 at the New England 3-yard line. Yeah, so you have Russell Wilson dropping back. You have the wide receivers for the Seahawks stacked on the left side. You have Darrell Revis. He was, I think he was number 24.
Darrell
I learned
Revis,
that
yes.
For a certain specific reason. But on that play, you have Doug Baldwin, their quote-unquote number one wide receiver. He does a slant route, and you have Revis following him. And I think there was a little, there's some hands going, like back and forth. I think it was within 5 yards or so.
It was.
But it looked like Doug Waldman pushed Revis into the ref, or I think it was the route, at least it was.
The ref did end up setting a pick,
yes.
Definitely.
And so, but it looked like he gave him a nudge to, like, you know, hit him.
I didn't see that, but maybe.
Essentially, the guy hit the ref. Sure. Revis hit the ref, and so Waldman was open for the touchdown. Mm-hmm. And it would be 24 points for the Seahawks. They got that field goal earlier. And Richard Sherman was on the sideline.
Before we get into that, let me talk up the touchdown real quick. I feel like with the coverage that was there, because it was across the field like that, maybe Baldwin would not have been as open. But I feel like that still could have been that still probably would have ended up a touchdown. It just would have been a higher degree of difficulty throw for Russell Wilson. Now, does that mean it was locked as a touchdown? Maybe, maybe not. But hey, not for nothing. The ref said an excellent pick on that play, Chris.
Right, and then I mean, Baldwin fell down on the play too, so he stumbled afterwards and started falling. I mean, if Revis didn't get picked off by the ref, he might have picked off that ball if he was there too.
Potentially.
I mean, it was a good play. I mean, there was no one on that side of the field at all.
It was a legal play for certain.
Right.
Yeah.
There was no one on that side of the field for the Patriots to cover over that way anyway. So, I mean, it was a good play calling by the Seahawks there.
And you know that...
And they were thinking Lynch too, I'm sure.
Russell Wilson, I think he would have questioned himself if Revis was still on him. He would, you know, do I really want to make this pass? But
Maybe.
But there's in 2012 or 2013, Revis and Richard Sherman had a little Twitter battle type of thing, and I think it like fizzed over and after time. But this season, everyone's asking who's the best quarterback.
Yeah, yeah.
You or
and
Revis?
This was 2013, by
so,
the way.
So you have Richard Sherman going up, you know, the camera on the sidelines, and he of course has to talk trash into it. He says the words. He says 2-4 with you know, showing his fingers with the numbers, and then he looks at the scoreboard and says touchdown. So pretty much people saw, oh, they had 24 points. That's what he was referring to.
I saw 24-14, but you have an alternate theory.
But oh yeah, it was the thing about it was that I think Baldwin was like a roommate or something, or a good friend of Sherman's and stuff.
Right.
And he, I think, quote unquote, schooled Revis. So. As a way of mocking Revis, he said 2-4, 2-4, and touchdown. And I thought that wasn't cool, so I hated Richard Sherman at that moment. So,
and hey, that was the score of the game, though, 2-4.
2-4?
24.
That's how much they ended up scoring, but there was still a lot of time left, though.
What interesting point you make there, Weasel. At this point, the Patriots are down 10 points. Okay, Weasel, continue.
I'd like to actually give a little stat for y'all that has to do with the Patriots having a 10-point deficit here.
Okay.
Okay, so you got the Steelers under Bill Cowher, okay? With a lead of over 10 points, Bill Cowher's record is 110 games. He lost one, tied one. 110 games. And you have the biggest comeback in the Super Bowl, it would have been 10 points.
Correct.
Which
the Broncos, I believe, were involved with that.
Something like that, I believe. And but this one, they have a deficit of 10 points.
Broncos over the Packers, by the way.
Yeah, you kind of have you get a feeling with like on the sideline, you know, with Sherman. I think when he was very like, animated with it and stuff. It's just
whoa, Richard Sherman is animated.
It was pretty animated, but I think a lot of the players would. I think they just thought they had this game won type of thing because they have the number one defense, number one scoring defense, number one passing offense, number three running game defense. And how are they going to get 10 points off of them? Well,
I don't know. That's a legitimate question. They are the greatest defense of all time, according to them.
Yeah. So 24-14. So Patriots next drive, you got 4:54 remaining. They ended up having to punt. Three and out for the Seahawks at 3:15. They also had to get rid of that one.
Real quick, you know what at this point right now, start of midway through the first quarter probably midway through the second quarter and through now with the Seahawks defense, what they started doing with the defensive line, it's like they took a playbook out of what the Giants did with the two Super Bowls they beat the Patriots, because the Giants always crossed their defense end, defense tackles, and pressured up the middle because they know Brady couldn't handle that, and they showed that in here until the fourth quarter.
That's when
they stopped doing it. And how many times I say I hate prevent defenses because of that, and they stopped doing
from
it. Right, because they stopped doing it, but they were getting the pressure, and that's where that second pick came from Brady because he threw the ball too soon because they were getting
forcing
pressure
because
there's one after another. They were coming up the middle at him, and he likes to stay in the pocket, but they're doing those stunts and everything with defense and defense tackles. And, I mean, that was the same thing with the Giants. The Giants said that's, you know, that's why they were successful against the Patriots.
When it comes to the concept of them stopping that strategy, I'm afraid I'm going to have to quote a favorite musical group of Weasels. In the song Sabotage, of course, I'm referring to the Beastie Boys. Why? You see what I did there?
Pretty much.
You're
so,
welcome, Weasel. Carry on.
Now, that touchdown to Baldwin, it was set up earlier by, you have Russell Wilson. He does have some scrambling ability. And with 6:43 remaining, you have linebacker Chandler Jones had a clear path directly to Russell Wilson. It was like running. Sack him. That's it. He whiffed. He didn't even touch him. And
Olé!
He ended up getting 15 yards off of that. That would have been one of the plays that could have slowed down Seattle. But they didn't end up scoring the touchdown. And then you have kind of back and forth. It was Seattle and the Patriots just punting back and forth. And then you have just before the. Just before you have, I guess, at the fourth quarter, in the fourth quarter with 12:10 remaining, Patriots got the ball off a punt at their own 32-yard line, and after a 9-play drive, you have a 2nd and 4 at the Seattle 4-yard line. There was a touchdown pass to Danny Amendola for 4 yards, and so that brought them within 3. So, you got a good amount of time left for the Seahawks. They got 7:45 remaining. Maybe you want to run down the clock some. And they ended up getting 3 and out. And they had to punt it away back to the Patriots. They got the ball at the 36-yard line. So, you have a 10-play mega drive here. It takes it from 16:52 all the way down to the 2 minutes and 6 seconds. You have Brady. He was at the 2-minute warning around there. You have a wide receiver, Julian Edelman.
Yes.
He was running around to the left. It looked like he kind of maybe made a little push off spin or something like that.
It's within 5 yards.
But
so.
I guess, yeah, because it was within 5 yards, he did like a little, like a spin, like a little push and then a spin towards
and
the left sideline.
And he was grabbed too. Let's
yeah,
be clear.
It wasn't just that. Yeah. So he made a big play by when he spun around. Brady delivered the ball, a 3-yard touchdown to put the Patriots up 28-24.
Chris, I can already feel you drooling from here. Say it.
No, this is the same exact route that Edelman ran that Brady missed earlier on the drive before in their other touchdown. This is a play that we used to call when we played flag football.
Stab, right.
All the time. You cut in, back out, and Brady. Like gunned the ball the first time with Edelman. I mean, that ball. There was no way Edelman was catching that ball, regardless of where that ball was thrown.
It was high,
the first one,
and it was a fireball.
Dude, it was like 90 miles an hour coming at him, and so Brady this time said, "I'm not going to overpower this ball because he knew it came out of his arm quick." I was like watching it live. I'm like, "Holy crap, that ball is fast!" This was the ugliest duck I have seen thrown in the NFL, I think, ever.
I don't know about that because I know you're watching Conference Championship Sunday when Russell Wilson threw that 500 ball to Luke Wilson on the 2-point conversion. But if you want
right,
to say it was
but that wasn't a duck, though. I mean, at least that was a 500 ball. This one was like
a
duck fluttering sideways over there. It's like someone shot it or something. There was not, it wasn't tipped. It was like Brady of saying, "I'm not going to throw this. I'm going to, going to get, like, not the concrete arm, throw it down to the ground. Not going to overball it. I'm just going to, like, lob it to him. I don't care what my form is. I'm just going to get it to him." Just,
you know, in the whole concept of the short dink and dunk, we touched on this earlier. Edelman, of course, was the only Patriots receiver to break 100 yards. But a lot of that short dink and dunk action kept them in manageable third down situations. Shane Vereen, goodness gracious, as the running back, had 11 catches on the night himself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and whenever I have my, I could get my dad on the line, and every time They would do that wide set. Vereen in the backfield. Vereen's going to catch in the flat. Watch. Boom. I called that at least four times throughout the game. And there was a couple times, I'll grant, that where Vereen was targeted, the linebackers had excellent coverage on it. But by, I'll put it, suffice it to say that the total package, their spread package with the running back coming out of the backfield, basically they sent more receivers than the Seahawks could cover overall. I thought that was the good strategy.
Right. He bailed Brady out of one. It was in the first half where he had that one-handed catch, too. Shane Vereen.
That was pretty
amazing. That ball might have been intercepted for how bad that ball was thrown. I don't know if there's secondary over there somewhere, but that ball was way ahead of him, and he just reached out one hand to grab it.
Weasel.
So you got the Patriots. They took the lead 28-24. So you got a little bit above the two-minute warning left. Seattle did have all three timeouts.
By the way, I believe the stat was something like 14 points total given up in the fourth quarter on the season by the Seahawks or something.
Like that.
Since week eight.
Since week eight, thank you. Yeah. So the second half of the season.
In the fourth quarter.
In the fourth quarter.
So,
and they matched that in this fourth quarter.
Right, the Patriots only had, I think, 12 or something like that.
Something like that,
They only gave up field goals. They haven't given up a touchdown the last 8 weeks.
Well, they played a lot of their division opponents during that time, but we'll leave that alone. Weasel.
The thing about this Super Bowl drive is that a field goal won't win it. So,
bingo.
Russell Wilson's got the ball 202, and he gets a pass for 31 yards, and there is a pass that was actually incomplete. It was intended for Chris Matthews, but there's a guy that was guarding him. It was...
I'm glad you got this, Weasel. I'm very glad.
Brandon Browner.
It was, Brandon Browner. I think at the... He is a 6'4 cornerback, and he was able to, you know, pretty much meet at, I think, at the apex right there with the guy. He would have caught it, maybe, but he was right there with him, and it fell incomplete. Then there was, you could look at it as like your...
No, go ahead.
Your Tyree kind of catch. You have...
Okay, well, before you go to that one, let me go real quick with that Marshawn Lynch catch. They had Jamie Collins covering him. Out there, they're praising Jamie Collins, you know, his athletic ability.
Oh, he's so great. He's so wonderful.
He was so horrible in the Super Bowl. I don't know if it was what, because they're like, oh, how he tackles and everything like that. I mean, he missed Russell Wilson twice. Marshawn Lynch just juked the hell out of him one time and just stiffed arm another time. And he's out there in the flat covering Marshawn Lynch on a pass. Where's the ball going to go? It's like when you have a linebacker on Gronk, when you have a linebacker on beast mode. You know, and they had it earlier, the drive before, when Russell Wilson, I don't know if it was Russell Wilson or Marshawn Lynch ran an out and up.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he just stopped running and or Wilson threw it too far outside.
Wilson floated it.
He always floats the ball. But
true, but he overthrew him.
Right. So, I mean, that he was open there. That was a lot of yards there.
Yeah.
And so they're like, why not the very first play? We're going back to Marshawn Lynch. We're going to open him up outside. And I'm like,
that was a great play.
It was. It was very good. I mean, for 32 yards, for 31 yards.
Can't front on that. Weasel. All
right. So you got you have an 11-yard pass to Lockett. And that
Ryan Lockett, yes.
They brought him to the 38-yard line of the Patriots. And then you have Russell Wilson throwing a deep pass to the right, and you have a curse, number 15.
Jermaine Curse.
And he was a guy guarding him. His name is, I guess people will know this one, Malcolm Butler. He's a rookie free agent from West Alabama. So he goes, gets a hand on the ball as they're diving. The ball just, you know, is kind of tipped, and so you have Curse falling to the ground. The ball bounces against his knee, bounces against his thigh, and he grabs it, and he's at about the 5-yard line, and it was thought, you know, incomplete pass. He made the play, but
until
he clearly made the catch. He got up, and at least Butler did push him out of bounds, because if he got up, I'm pretty sure it would have been a touchdown.
He would have had a shot at it, and I think this is a point where we can correctly use the verb corralled for bringing this football in. This was actually an absolutely stupid catch, and really the only reason that Russell Wilson was able to get the ball down the field without giving it to Lynch in any form or fashion. I was not confident in Russell Wilson's ability to move the football passing, and well, basically, with some of his choices, he proved me right, but this happened and bailed him out. So
yeah, it was the kind of play. The reason I said Tyree is that
It's a Tyreek moment rather than
a type moment.
Catch.
Yes,
I follow that
because it was so huge and it got them the ball at the 5-yard line.
And by the way, how pathetic is it? Like, you know, NBC's just got that video queued up, ready to go in case someone makes a big play, and they just jump right.
Oh, they were all ready for it.
Oh my god, that was so sad.
What's bad is the safety that was coming over. He jumped over the ball.
Yeah.
Too. I mean, if that was the Seahawks secondary in there, it would probably have been intercepted on that one. Because they would have gone for the ball on that one.
That makes sense. Weasel.
So, you have a first down at the 5-yard line with 106 remaining. I think they still have about one more timeout remaining. And so you have Marshawn Lynch, the beast. One of the best running backs maybe in the NFL.
The best power runner in the NFL.
He is, definitely. Yeah. So well, he runs for 4 yards to the 1-yard line. So.
What am I doing? Let's I'm see. Knocking on the door.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you're at the 1-yard line, second down. So, instead of giving it to the beast, hand the ball off. You have a timeout. You could run. It's pretty much two runs, two chances for Marshawn Lynch. Get the ball in. If they miss that, if he got stuffed, people would be like, well, what could you do? Type of thing.
Well, moreover, you can get back to the line and get the fourth down playoff as well.
Yeah, but it was like, the thing was that, he was, you know, on fire. He just got a 5-yard gain.
Agreed.
And the offensive coordinator for the Seahawks is Daryl Bevel. He used to be actually Favre's quarterback coach. He was the offensive coordinator for the Vikings for a while. And he, I guess, decided to, yeah. He decided to make a slant pass over to, is it Ryan or... Ryan Lockett.
Ryan Lockett, yes.
It was, but you have that guy, Malcolm Butler. He's a rookie free agent out of West Alabama, and he noticed that they were trying to run a pick play. You had Lockett in the back of the behind another wide receiver. Lockett would just run a slant route, bam, goal line touchdown. The guy must have been watching film, and because he said he recognized it, and
he also said he watched it. Yeah, exactly.
He pretty much. You could say maybe out-muscled or...
he jumped it. He didn't out-muscle. He jumped the route.
Positioning.
He jumped the route.
Yeah, he had the positioning. He came down with the ball. And just one play before or two plays before, he gave up that big pass.
Well, he's the one that actually tipped it
right
on that other pass. I mean, he had a good position on that play, too.
So he's all,
it's just a lucky draw. Right.
Yeah.
But instead of, holding him back, the guy gets the interception to the... returns it to the 2-yard line. Everyone's going crazy. You got a unsportsmanlike penalty against the
Patriots right.
And that brought him to the 1-yard line.
Right.
So 20 seconds left, game's over. Not so much.
You got to remember though with that Butler. That was his first interception of his career too.
Yeah.
So two of them in the Super Bowl, their first career interceptions.
Before we get into the rest of what ensued, so let's paint this picture, folks. Weasel already states you've got the best power runner in the game in your backfield. And you're going to throw the expletive deleted ball. Now, there's already been pressers and interviews with Pete Carroll. And Pete Carroll goes, well, now see what it was is we had this. We were going to try and do this thing here. We had the spread set in there. But they brought their goal line formation on. So we're ready. It's like, look, stop it. What's been working all game and got Marshawn Lynch his better than 4 yards per carry average in this Super Bowl was two things. A, handing the damn ball to Marshawn Lynch, just cause. And B, double-teaming Vince Wilfork, the world's fastest immovable object. I put this as a major matchup in the Matchup Mania on the NGSCSports.com website. If you don't believe me, look it up. It's there, and it has this pairing there in bold. As one of the main ones you got to watch in this game, another being Gronk, which was very interesting because they paid attention to that. They got an interception out of it, I'm just saying. But if all night, as long as they double-teamed Will Fork, Lynch took care of the rest. There were some where they got some stops. Well, one, they were trying to block Will Fork one-on-one. Hey, life happens, you know.
Another one, a couple times the Patriots run blitzed. So they weren't going to come back and just they tried blitzing the run to try to, and it worked. They only did it a couple times, but, right. I mean, it worked when they did it.
And let's pretend they did that here. Oh, wait, they couldn't have because just the basis of the formation where Butler's sitting back already tells me they weren't run blitzing, right?
All right.
So, in effect, They got elements of players beyond the first level sitting back, which means if Marshawn Lynch beats the first level, it's a damn touchdown. Now, sure, Brady may have another 20 seconds or so to work with. I can live with that. Hell, the Giants did in the last Super Bowl they beat him in. You know. But now, thanks to Pete Carroll, well, I shouldn't say Pete Carroll, but what was the coach?
The offensive coordinator, Daryl Bevel, and I'll just say this.
Daryl Bevel, hold on.
Something
because of this play call, I now have to listen to stupid people try to tell me that Tom Brady is better than Joe Montana for the rest of my life. Weasel, continue.
Offensive coordinator, Daryl Bevel, he's the guy that gets called the play, and I think Pete Carroll okayed it type of thing. That's what I think.
Sure.
And so he's been quoted as saying, "We could have done a better job staying strong on the ball." So he was putting a little bit of blame onto the wide receiver.
You know how you stay strong with the ball, Weasel? You give it to Marshawn Lynch!
Exactly, and they did that last slant. They trusted a guy who has 18 career receptions. So,
and you know what? I like the play. I like the play. The timing of it? No, I would have ran that on third down.
Okay.
Not second down.
Maybe mix in a play action element to it?
No, I wouldn't even done a play action. I like the play. Okay. It was a good play. You should have just handed the ball to Marshawn Lynch. If he didn't get in that time, you have to call your third timeout. Then you'll have what, 14 seconds left.
You throw a pass.
If you throw that quick pick, you know the pick screen or you know whatever it is, you throw that one. If it's too high, you throw it high or whatever. Because then if your guy can't come up with it. It's going to be incomplete and kick a field goal. Well, you can't go kick a field goal anyway.
Well, no.
But then fourth down, you go back with.
You can run or pass, and correct. The defense has to account for both.
Right.
Precisely.
So as I said, I like the play. I would have seen it. I would have liked it on third down if Marshawn Lynch didn't get on a second down.
I agree.
But third down, that was a good play to call. It's just not is wrong placement.
Well,
you know.
And with the crowding that was happening.
And they might have even thought, let's try passing because they're thinking we're going to run. Because, I mean, really, they had eight guys in the box up at the line. It was just the two corners back there and then the other one out on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to have everyone up playing the run. They had the outside linebackers guarding the flats for Russell Wilson. So they were keying the run. Can't say the ball. I mean, if it was thrown maybe a little bit higher, just so you know, one of your receiver can almost get to it, kind of tight. Or because if it was an incomplete, you just want to throw a little high, yeah. Just in case, so you can get that other play. You don't want to go throw low if he gets tackled on the one. You got to call a timeout again. So
yeah, well, if we're talking about ball placement, let's be clear. Russell Wilson didn't throw the best one. He actually overled the receiver a little bit, if he asked.
Correct, yeah. It could have came back to the back shoulder, that type of throw.
Yeah, exactly. Throw away from the coverage. The same mistake Brady made in his interception throwing to Gronk.
So, yeah, definitely at least one running play. At least one run before that. But I agree with the third down, doing a pass on the third down, yeah. I agree with that.
You
would have been a much better way.
I don't know that I would have done that, but based on the clock management, I like the concept that I would have either run or pass at my disposal. And if it came down to fourth down and 1 yard, I don't give a damn what formation the Patriots have out there. You're going to either run Lynch or you're going to show Lynch and put Wilson to the outside.
Yep. So
bottom line.
And, so, yeah.
And now we're not getting paid millions to do it.
You got to look at other people are like, why don't you throw a fade? You don't have a fade receiver.
You really don't.
And then how Wilson floats that ball anyway, you'll have like all four corners for the Patriots to be over there in the corner by the time it comes down. I mean, yeah, you got Matthews in there, but you put cover Browner on there. Browner only has to cover 10 yards.
Yep.
The Matthews, I think it was, if they tried doing the fade route for Matthews in the first half, I think they would have gotten a touchdown. Now, the thing was, yeah, they did switch to Browner. And so that fade route, a little bit tough.
I agree.
So, but early on, I mean, he just, you know, he had like a ridiculously good game. So. But yeah, sure, pretty much you have at the 20 seconds left. He brought the ball back to the 2 yard line, but there was an unsportsmanlike conduct. I think they were happy about the play or something, so they were celebrating.
It was over celebration. Yeah.
A little bit over, but I don't blame them. And they got a penalty, though. And so it brought him back to about to the one. And the game really.
Maybe even possibly within the one, but whatever.
It was kind of not over then because Brady had to get the ball out of there. And he had to it would have been if he nailed it, he would have been most likely in the end zone.
Yeah.
2 points given, and the Seahawks get their ball back. But Brady did his thing with the hard count. And
some dumbass jumped.
The victim of this was I think the defense was all pumped up and stuff, and you have Michael Bennett. The guy, I think they said something along the lines of he's been, I think, penalized like 10 times or so this season with it. And so Brady got him.
Yeah, I think it was more than I think it was like 12 or 16.
I believe the stat is, and I could have this wrong, but I know they're among the top five, but I think the Seahawks are the top team in offsides penalties.
Correct. Right, but I'm just saying Michael Bennett in general, I think he had 12 or 16 himself.
Are you a rock of discipline?
Why he was standing up, I don't know. He had so much success during the game of firing through the gap from the down position. Why he was standing up and trying to jump it, I don't understand why on that part.
He wanted to do whatever it takes to be
and
that guy. I'm still
with it. With defense alignment, how they jump off sides, they should not. They should be watching the ball. They should not be listening to the quarterback. They're right there in front of the ball. No D lineman should jump off sides. You should just tune everyone out and just watch the ball. You don't even look at the ball because you have quicker reflex coming out of your peripheral vision than staring at the ball.
Agreed.
So once you see that ball move is when you go. You don't listen. You don't do anything. And I don't know why a defensive lineman, especially a defensive tackle, because they always put him on the inside a lot of times, even though he's a DN, jump off sides because they want to try getting that jump. But especially on that corner, you just got to do what's been working all game, you know.
So, at any rate, Patriots win the Super Bowl, but a little bit more shenanigans, Weasel go.
Well, so you got the Patriots move the ball because of the penalty due to Bennett jumping off sides. They got the ball at the six, so pretty much it's a kneel type of thing for the Patriots to win. But the whole thing with the fight and stuff, how there are swings and stuff.
So
go for it.
Yeah, let's get to it. So they were trying to get into the kneel down, try to force a fumble, long shot, yada yada yada. There was a little bit of extracurricular. I personally saw, and you know, Bruce Irvin ended up getting shipped out. I don't necessarily think he was the first guy to start throwing punches, but he was flagged as the guy who was the instigator of the aggression, so to speak. But yeah, basically an all-out scrum breaks out. Gronk and he get tied up, and it's just a whole lot of mess. And, well, you know, I think Darrell Revis said something about we kept it classy. Not really.
No, well,
neither side was classy at that moment, I dare say.
It was,
but
at that play, pretty much the game was over and stuff.
Correct.
And it's like Seattle, you have the bad play call, and you have the way they ended the game, kind of people are, you know, calling like classless and not a positive light on them. So,
well, no one, but I mean, let's put it this way. I'm not to say the whole, hey, don't go after the kneel down thing. It's the bleeping Super Bowl. Okay. And if you're an O-lineman, you know, they're coming because you can tell by the way they're positioned if someone's going to be aggressive or not. So be effing ready. It's your job. Now, people who started to shove and started to grab face masks and stuff. What I saw in the film, granted, I only watched it six times, was the first guy I saw reaching for face mask was Gronk. Now, I say face mask specifically because there was other helmet contact. There was a whole lot of swinging going on. But the first guy to go for face mask I saw was Gronk. And I'm not saying Gronk's had necessarily been penalized, but let's call a spade a spade here. Both sides were pretty pathetic in our showing there.
It's like the game was over, though.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, so Seattle, yeah, they're looking like a bunch of sore losers.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, that was definitely true. And so, especially the part where you got offensive coordinators calling out their receivers for bad play calls they make. You got players all over the Seahawks squad going, I don't know why we didn't run it. All this other stuff. You can be thinking that all you want, but you got to be careful when the mic's in your face. And I know that's easy for me to say. I don't live that life that they do. And I know that I'm a personality that would be prone to speak my mind a little bit too candidly in that situation. But
something that was a kind of a little bit icing on the cake was that When you have Richard Sherman, his reaction when they, I think when they got the interception, he was just yelling, you know, like, you know, oh, what? And then his face just turns to this sadness.
And he just says, no.
And it's like disbelief and like, you know, it's like.
Disbelief at the play call, probably.
With my Twitter handle, it's Weasel the SOTG.
At Weasel the SOTG.
I sent out a pic of him with his face that was all disappointment, and the caption up top is "You sad bro."
He changed it up. So, I see what you did there.
And so there was a little bit bad blood between Brady.
Great.
And
don't be surprised you get some Seattle fans trying to claim you cheer for the Patriots. Trust me, that's not one of the two teams you cheer for.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, I mean, we'll leave it at that. You got a good wrap up there, brother. With all that in mind, the MVP of the game was named to be Tom Brady. Pop quiz. Should Tom Brady have been? There you go. Weasel.
Yes.
Really?
You're going up against the number one defense in the NFL, the number one passing defense in the NFL, the number one scoring defense, and the number three rush defense in the NFL. And the guy made, he was 37 of 50. That's four touchdowns, two INTs. The two INTs were terrible. They were so ugly. But the thing is 328 yards against the best defense. People say best defense maybe of the decade. They're up there. He still pulled it together. So the Seahawks side, though, Chris Matthews should have been the MVP, but didn't work out that way.
You know, I give you respect for coming out with that answer, because if you had answered it that way, I just thought about, wow, if he actually thinks he earns this, I'm going to say, look, I know you had Brett Favre on your one team that one time, but two interceptions in an MVP is up there with trying to tell me a guy who leads the career interceptions as a record is the best quarterback of all time. It's not going to fly in my boat. I see where you're coming from. You make a great case. Overruled. No, absolutely not. I can't do it. Two interceptions? Of course, I'll grant you this. I'll give you this much credit, Weasel. Brady deserves it more than Flacco did. I'll give you that for a mile and back.
Yeah, I mean, he did have decent stats in the, I think his last couple drives, he was 13 for 15 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, give him that, but those two interceptions are bad. MVP, I would have gone with Julian Edelman.
Yeah, and you know, you texted me that, I'm like, I really think, what I picked today, it could be different tomorrow, but I keep waffling between Gronk and Edelman. And what got Edelman his numbers to get over 100 was, in my opinion, more poor Seahawk tackling than it is Edelman doing anything. And what I know is this. Edelman got that open because Gronk drew the attention that he did. But at the end of the day, I mean, look, Edelman made good plays. Edelman caught the game winner, what would be the game winner.
He was just all over the field. A lot of his, you said, missed tackles and everything. I mean, they're broke tackles. He made.
They go down as
right,
tackles.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a lot of them were on third downs. He had a couple. Yeah. He took a shot going in the up across the middle, grabbed it a couple down. He kind of came up a little bit. No, I think it was in like first half. I think it was one of the first touchdown or something like that.
I know the one you're talking about. I forget what it was.
And he held on to it.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's the reason why I picked him, because he was all over the field. I mean, they brought him over in motion. That's what all these little short passes, and with him and Vereen, they were basically the ones that were catching all the short passes.
And he never, Vereen, definitely 11. I mean, you could make a case for him in his 11 receptions to keep the ball moving. Granted, his number of yards wasn't that high, but he certainly kept the chains moving in a lot of situations, not necessarily catching the conversions, but keeping their third down count low. So, anyways, we're a little late. We had another topic on the docket, but that can be brought up in another 2 weeks. That's right. Next week we are taking off. Look, let's put it this way. Chris and Weasel, they work hard. I'm a big slacker. But Chris and Weasel, they work hard. They deserve next week off, and they're going to get it. Besides, we all need to take our time to deal with the fact that football season is indeed over. Well, I got a new daughter. I guess I can hang out with her. But with that in mind, gentlemen, excellent season. Chris, your overall study hall champion. I think I was the one that had the closest pick. With the Seahawks going into this game.
Correct.
But Weasel did win the playoff.
Woot.
So
I'll take it.
I'll take it. But yeah, with all that in mind, of course, on Twitter, hit up Weasel at Weasel the SOTG. You can always hit up Chris at Rankin the SOTG. And of course, I am the student of the game, Kyle Nash at the SOTG on Twitter. And see you guys in 2 weeks. Until next time, class dismissed.